It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. There are many outdoor adventures we talk about that I know I will never try because they're too hard, too expensive, too dangerous, require too many new skills, and after all, each of us can only be really good at a few things. But almost everyone can ride a bike, and that means a big adventure that you can feel proud of is at the end of your driveway. Alaska is a great place for long-distance rides through wild scenery, camping out on the way, or going town to town. And this time of year is when folks take off around the world for international adventures by bicycle. We'll cover both topics today, starting with world touring, and then talking about some rides you can try in our region and how to do it. For this first half of the show, I have some guests I'm really excited to talk to who are from France, Christian Serret and Patricia Veron. And they are doing a three-year journey. They've been already cycling for more than a year, crossing Asia, and now have just arrived in Alaska. We're talking in May, and they're headed off for points unknown. And Christian, I guess you plan to make it all the way to the tip of South America, right?
Yes, it's our plan. We have a project to go to the north, Prudhoe Bay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's your next spot is to cross Alaska.
Yeah.
But compared to what you've been doing, that's not even very far. I mean, tell us where you've been so far. What countries have you been through so far?
Actually, Indonesia.
Pardon me?
Yeah.
Where did you start? You started in Grenoble?
No, we started from France.
Mm-hmm.
The first April, but last year in 2014.
Uh-huh. And where did you go? Where have you gone along the way?
Go up to the North Cape in Norway.
Oh, wow.
And after we go down to Russia,
uh-huh.
From St. Petersburg to Moscow, and after we go to East, from Moscow to Vladivostok.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but we take some parts, we take a Trans-Siberian train.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because we don't have a long visa, only 3 months.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And from Vladivostok, we...
Vladivostok is all the way on the east end. You cross all of Russia. Okay.
Yeah. We cross Russia from west to east.
Right.
Yeah. So far east to Russia. And from Russia, we take a ship to South Korea.
South Korea?
Because we can cross North Korea with bicycle. It's not possible.
Right.
Yeah. And another ship from South Korea to Japan.
Uh-huh.
And we ride Japan... from Fukuoka to Tokyo.
Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. And we cross Mount Fuji. We would like to see Mount Fuji.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was in last December.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And from Tokyo, we flew to Bangkok in Thailand.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, to spend a warm winter.
Right.
Yeah. And from... yeah, from Thailand, we go to Myanmar, Burma,
and
we go down to Malaysia,
mm-hmm.
Singapore, and Indonesia.
All on your bicycle?
Yeah, only with bicycle. We were in Indonesia the last week. Yeah, we just arrived in Alaska. It's the first time in America.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, really.
That's quite a... And you quit your jobs.
Yeah.
You're an accountant, and Patricia works for the Postal Service in France. And you just put everything on the bicycle and just took off. There must have been some planning involved. How did you prepare? What did you do to prepare for this trip?
We don't have prepared a lot. We would like to see some points. For example, we have a dream to see the North Cape.
Uh-huh.
And to visit the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg,
uh-huh.
and to see the Red Place in Moscow, and to ride around the Baikal Lake.
Mm-hmm. Lake Baikal,
Lake Baikal. And to see the Mount Fuji, like I tell you, and to see the White Sand Beach in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Bali.
Mm-hmm.
And to ride in Alaska and to see the national park in West America.
Uh-huh. And so your preparation was just dreams?
Yeah, just dreams. We have some points and we follow these points. And yeah, okay, we can go with bicycle.
Uh-huh. So I saw your bike is covered with gear, bags.
Yeah.
And we'll have a picture of it on our website so people can see you. And we'll also have your blog on the website, which is you're blogging as you go. Do you mostly camp out? Do you mostly stay in people's houses? Where do you stay at night?
Sometimes we pitch our tent. Sometimes we go to the rest house or big picture scene.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we go to the people who guest us.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but we like to pitch our tent.
Right.
We like to sleep under our tent and yeah.
Is that, I would think in some countries that might be easier than in other countries. In some countries, it's okay to put up your tent anywhere. In other countries, maybe not. Is that, do you have to?
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. In Europe and in the country where there's less people, we can pitch our tent. But for example, in Asia, sometimes it's not possible. There are too many people, it's crowded everywhere. So we go to the hotel. But in this country, it's not expensive. We can spend a night in a hotel for €2 or €3
mm-hmm.
or $5.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So you're making your money last by camping out and staying in very, very cheap hotels, places that cost almost nothing to stay.
Yeah, of course. We don't have a large budget.
Mm-hmm.
So before we leave, we work a lot. We don't spend holiday. We don't go to the restaurant. We save money. And now, yeah, we have a budget, but it's a little bit strict.
Mm-hmm. Well, things are a bit more expensive in Alaska. It's not so cheap here, but you can camp anywhere you like.
Yeah, it's a little bit expensive. But if we pitch our tent outside, if we cook ourselves, I think it's possible. It would be the same problem in the north of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Norway is very, very expensive. But we never go to the hotel, we never go to the restaurant, we just pitch our tent, we go to the supermarket, discount supermarket, and okay, yeah, mm-hmm. Budget is okay.
So what about the weather? I would think you would have probably run into some pretty nasty weather over the year that you've been traveling across Europe. And across Asia. Do you ever just like say, oh, this is awful, I want to stop?
sometimes. No. About the weather, I think we are very lucky. Very, very lucky. We have only nice weather, warm temperature. And yeah, sometimes too warm in Asia. But mm-hmm. Yeah, we are a little bit afraid from here in Alaska. Because it's a little bit early, and
yeah.
we can reach the snow, we can have rain days, yeah, but go and see.
Whatever happens, right. So you're headed up for the north of Alaska, and it's only, we're talking today on May 6th. Normally, you would find a lot of snow and ice, but this year has been very warm. Not much. The winter has been very mild, so yeah, you might be okay, or you might turn around.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't like it, you just turn around and go somewhere else, right?
Yeah. But we don't have objective.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not possible, we go back. It's not. Yeah. It's just for us. We try for. It's a dream. Nobody expect for us and. Yeah, it's not possible. We go back or we stay or we change our plan.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds very, very nice. I just am becoming very envious of you. You've untied yourself from all the strings that are attaching you to life and just go. And just live. Yeah.
We need that, I think. Mm-hmm. We are now, I am 50 years old. And my day, okay, I need to make a break in my life. I need to live a dream.
Mm-hmm.
So No, we are in Elohim. It's amazing.
And you're doing it. So tell us some of the things that you must have had some adventures. Tell us some of the things that have happened to you along the way. That it hasn't all been good, I'm sure. You've had maybe a few setbacks or a few things that have happened along the way that are good stories.
We have a lot of good stories. Yeah, and you know, on the road, simple things, normal things, become extraordinary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We meet very nice people, and which thing I can tell you? There's lot of good things. Nice meeting. For example, yeah. In Singapore,
uh-huh.
We just crossed Singapore. It's a very small city, and we would just like to spend one day and take a ferry to Indonesia. But on the road, we meet the people. They tell us, come in my house. I have a little house, and we talk, and he has ride bicycle over the world like us, and uh-huh. So we spend one week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 1 week. We would like to spend one day, and we spend one week, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Another time, Patricia Black is wheel. Yeah, he broke his wheel, and it's a very big problem. There is nothing.
You're just out in the middle. Nothing around.
Uh-huh. Nothing around. So we...
What country were you in?
Oh, it was in China.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but a little bit in China. Uh-huh. And we will be a little bit afraid. What can we do if we don't have wheel? So a truck pass, we edge king, yeah? We stop here, we put bicycle inside the truck, we go to the first village. It's a very small village. And yeah, we are looking. There is a bike shop. No, there is no bike shop. We ask people. Yeah, we have a little bit problem. Yeah, they talk together. And one time, a whole people come. It is, I have some trash here. Go and see. And we find a wheel.
Uh-huh.
And he repairs this wheel. Just the same size.
Well, lucky,
yeah,
huh?
The same size with 36 hole, and yeah, the same wheel. He repaired it for us, and okay, it's okay. We are
well, right now we spend
time with him,
uh-huh.
And the next day we can go,
yeah,
without problem.
I guess everyone probably is inspired by what you're doing, so they want to be your friend. I mean, they say, wow, the adventurers, they go off and see the entire world. I want to know those people. I know I feel that way. It's inspiring to see what you're doing. I don't know if my English is maybe, I'm using the wrong words.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
How about a friend? Yeah, a family is a little bit afraid. Mm-hmm. Some friends are, wow, you are lucky. We would like to go in with you. And yeah, no. The big problem for us is a family.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Because you're gone for so long.
Yeah, and my parents are old now, and sometimes I think I am not good son.
Yeah, but yeah.
Now it's we have internet. We can Skype with.
Oh, do
with
you?
Them. Yeah.
So it's very different than it used to be. It's Outdoor Explorer, and we're talking about traveling the world by bicycle. And my guest is Christian Serret. He's traveling with his wife, Patricia Veron, whose English is such that she doesn't want to participate in the interview. So Christian's speaking for her, and he's doing a great job. And they started off in France. They're from Grenoble, and they have traveled essentially all the way across Europe, all the way across Asia, and are now in Alaska and planning to cycle across Alaska and to the tip of South America. We're talking in May, and they've just arrived. We're pre-recording the show. And I heard from Sage Cohen, who is also a cyclist. I'd asked her to be on the show because she's ridden her bike in Tanzania and Kazakhstan and other places. And she couldn't fit in her schedule, but she had Christian and Patricia staying with her. And so she said, well, you've got to talk to these people. They're the real deal. And they really are just such a great adventure. So Sage, how did you connect with Sage Cohen here in Anchorage?
Yeah, with a social network, Warm Shower. It's the first time we go to this social network, and it was a great experience. Sage is a very nice girl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, and so she sort of put you up in her house and showed you the town and everything?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That seems like the social, that must make it a bit easier, you being able to use the computer, figure out where you're going and where you might be able to stay and that kind of thing. Do you plan out a couple of days in advance, or how do you plan where you're going?
No, we don't plan nothing.
You plan nothing?
Just this time, because we have a plane from Indonesia to Alaska, mm-hmm. but after, we don't have plane. For example, after this interview, we don't know where we go, to the south or to the north. No, we don't know. We decide after on the road. Oh, okay. That's been good. Go.
So you just ride up the road and you see a fork in the road and just decide when you get to the fork in the road which way you're going to go?
Yeah.
Wow, that is so cool. So, Sage said that you were thinking that you would go up to the northern tip of Alaska and then to the southern tip of South America. Is that part of your dream, part of something you want to complete in this trip, to go all the way from the north of North America to the south of South America?
To the South America, yeah. We have planned to go to the Ushuaia.
Mm-hmm.
And after the South America, we go home, I think, by Africa.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Yeah, from Cape Town to home.
So fly from the south of South America to Cape Town, the south of Africa.
Yeah.
And then ride through Africa.
And ride to Africa, from the south to the north. And after, yeah, we are very close from France. To France is okay. But it's a plane, we can change.
You can change it, yeah.
Yeah. Everything can change.
So you ride your bicycles through the Sahara Desert. It might be kind of hot. who knows? What if you feel like it, you would do that.
Yeah. We don't know.
Have you run into any dangerous situations? I think as great as the trip sounds, it also sounds kind of scary that you could be camping out in places where there's, you know, could be gangs, they could be, political unrest. Have you run into any situations where you felt you were in danger?
Actually, we didn't have find dangerous situation, but here we are a little bit afraid by the wildlife. For example, we are afraid by bears.
Bears, mm-hmm.
For us, I think tonight we spend our first night in the we pitch for the first night in Alaska our tent, and we are afraid by bears. Yeah.
Well, the bears, very rarely does anyone get hurt by a bear. So, yeah. You just need to store your food properly and stuff like that. But you, did you run into any wildlife, wild animals in Asia or?
In Asia, the big problem was the snake.
Mm.
The snakes, yeah. There are a lot of snakes. There is also monkeys. Yeah, monkeys. Ooh. Yeah, they come, they pick up the food, and no problem.
What do you do? Just yell at them?
For the snakes?
The monkeys, yeah.
For monkeys. In first, we would like to find a place without monkeys. And after, we go around and we, I don't know the word.
Throw things at them?
But we didn't have problem with monkeys.
What about dangerous roads? Sometimes you can, when you're biking between cities, you can run into roads that have no shoulder, and people drive very fast. Have you had some of those situations, and how do you deal with that?
Yes, but the bad roads, when there is a lot of cars.
Yeah.
For example, to enter in the big city like Tokyo, for example. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, very big city with a lot of cars. Yeah, it's the worst roads. We don't like that, but yeah, the drivers are correct.
Do you just avoid those? Just
we are afraid, but we didn't have problem. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But we don't like this road. We prefer the narrow road and mm-hmm. sometimes unpaved road. Yes, we like unpaved road.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, you'll find plenty of those in Alaska. Yeah. Well, I really wish you good luck.
Thank you.
I think it sounds like a wonderful adventure, and I wish I was going with you, and someday I'm going to do this. I swear. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And let us know how you're doing. We could we'd love to hear how your trip is going. We'll follow your blog and we'll follow your blog and let listeners know how you're doing as you go through your trip. So my guests have been Christian Serret. He's an accountant from Grenoble, France, and his wife, Patricia Veron, who works for the post office in France. And they have taken off to see the world, wandering around, and they've made it through into Alaska. And we're going to continue with this theme of talking about traveling. Maybe you are not ready to give up on your life and travel and do as Christian and Patricia are doing, just travel anywhere you like. But there's a lot of great bike trips you can do here in Alaska. And so when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about some of those journeys that are more manageable and that you can maybe do in a weekend. Several folks around our station do lots of biking, maybe not the around the world kind, but 100 miles at a go. Anchorage reporter Ann Hillman decided to try that when she signed up for a race from Talkeetna to the Denali viewpoint and back. It's called the Clean Air Challenge. At first, it was more about the challenge of the ride than the cause, but then something happened along the way.
Let's set the scene here a little bit. First off, we have the main character. That's me. I'm Anne. And my quest is I'm trying to ride 100 miles in the Clean Air Challenge. Now, I ride my bike every day, but I don't ride my bike 100 miles every day. I ride my bike like 5 miles every day or 10 miles. I am not like a super biker. I'm someone who puts on jeans and heads off to try to get from point A to point B. So the day before the ride, I roll my bike through the pattering rain and ask the volunteer mechanics to look it over.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's in good shape.
Isn't it awesome tomorrow?
That's kind of seat post. It doesn't wiggle.
Just like, you know,
unlike most of the other bikes that people are wheeling into the parking lot, mine's a bit clunky. It's an old commuter bike souped up with fenders, a rack, and neon lights. I've hauled furniture with this thing. It is not fast, unlike the sleek carbon frame bike Sherry Price rolls up with.
You can't really, yeah, you have to use your whole hand to pick it up.
Can I
see you pick it up with two fingers? Oh God, you're picking up that bike with two fingers.
Price has been training for the event in Arizona all winter, riding 40 or 50 miles every other day. But she still says 100 miles is a challenge.
It's not an easy thing. It's a lot of endurance and, you know, everybody pulling each other along, you know, as a team, you pull and you push. So we take turns.
Her attitude is much different from Pete Adams, who rolls up with a borrowed bike.
Why a loner?
Well, I didn't have one.
Period?
Yeah.
Do you bike much?
No, I hadn't biked at all, really.
Wait.
Until about 2 months ago.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Are you going to do the 100 tomorrow?
Yeah. Now I'm hooked. I just bought one from her. Yeah.
You're not worried? You're not?
What's
the longest you've done?
30 miles.
He wanders off and I glance at the seasoned bike mechanics.
Does that happen all the time? People are just like, yeah, I rode 30 miles. That's cool. Now I'm going to do 100.
Thank you.
No. Like, no one's concerned about this.
They will be at mile 70.
I suddenly feel a bit better. I'm a middle of the packer. After a decent night's sleep.
Okay, this is it. The morning of the event. And I'm more tired than anything. And it's cloudy. Yep. But it's not raining.
I leave the starting line and begin trudging up the bike path out of Talkeetna. Groups of friends chat around me, greeting me as they roll past. The first 14 miles are easy, and then I hit a snag. Sitting in the middle of the bike path was a songbird that had been hit by a car. It was struggling, and there was nothing I could do to help it. No organization I could call.
So I picked up the bird, and I moved it to the side of the road, and I kept biking, and I kept thinking, you know, there's a lot of situations in life where you can't do anything. But there's a lot of situations in life where maybe you can.
I spent a lot of time thinking about that bird and why it bothered me so much. I mean, I try to be a good person. I volunteer, I recycle, I adopt pets from the pound. But unlike most of the 265 other riders, I decided to do the Clean Air Challenge for selfish reasons. I wanted the experience of biking 100 miles and knowing that if I struggled, a community of people would help me out. Fundraising to help prevent lung diseases was a side note. So for 25 miles, I thought about that bird and what it meant. And then my thoughts turned to the other riders. Some were survivors of lung cancer. Others lost family members. And it occurred to me that being here and biking and cheering on everyone around me could be that little thing I can do in this situation. By the time the steady rain set in around mile 40 and I arrived soaked at the halfway point, my thoughts had taken a less introspective turn.
Brownies, cookies!
Bikers shake with cold from the persistent rain and 40-degree temperatures. Many contemplate scratching there or at the next stop. But I climb on my bike and slowly head up the hill and back toward Talkeetna. When I arrive at the 70-mile rest stop, the lawn is a sea of abandoned bicycles. I'm soaked and cold, but determined. Finally, nearly 3 hours later, 10 hours after I started.
Anne Hillman, you just biked 100 miles. How do you feel?
I feel a lot better than I thought I would. I think stopping 10 miles ago and eating some trail mix was good. But I must be sleepy because I'm a little bit out of it.
As I park my bike, Pete Adams walks up, already showered. He's the guy with the borrowed bike. He finished with no problems. So did Sherry Price. So, do I want to try biking a century again? We'll see in 2 weeks. I'm already signed up for Bike MS. I'm Ann Hillman.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today we're talking about traveling by bike, not just getting around, not just getting to work, not just biking after work and getting some exercise, but getting on your bike as part of your vacation or your travel and going from place to place. And in the first half, we had this amazing interview with Christian Serret and Patricia Verón, who just sold everything and got on their bikes and to bike around the world in 3 years and made their way through Anchorage. And as they were leaving the studio, they're headed north to points unknown. Inspiring, amazing, cool, but most of us are not going to do that, right? It's one of those things where you can admire it, but you're probably not going to give it a try. So in the second half, we're going to talk a little bit about stuff you can do, getting on your bike and leaving Anchorage or leaving whatever community you are in and exploring. And to talk about that, I have Kevin Turinsky with me, who is an avid cyclist and is the president of the Alaska Randonneurs. Is that?
Sure, that works.
You call it that? Yeah. And Randonneurs is a group that does these long distance endurance cycling trips, not competitively, but
long
just
long distance,
groups.
Non-competitive. Exactly.
Right. And so Kevin has biked all over Alaska and elsewhere too, and we'll be talking about some of the routes you could take, the conditions on different roads, what are some reasonable distances to go, how to get back. So lots of stuff we can talk about that's a bit more practical than what Christian and Patricia are doing. Not that I'm encouraging you not to do that, but I'm just guessing that a large percentage of our listeners probably are not going to do what they do. Kevin, tell me about cycling. Sounds like it's your thing.
It has been. I fell away from the bicycle a good many years. Took up mountaineering, and the appeal of randonneuring in particular really satisfied that mountaineering ethic, that adventure side, that challenge side. Except you're on a bike, you know. Uh-huh. How far can you go between sunrise and sunset in Alaska? You know, we've got long days, you know. So you can probably fit in about 400K if you're fit, you know.
Yeah. And it's a group activity where you're really just trying to test yourself. Nobody's timing you, right?
Exactly. Everyone is considered to be on an individual ride. All the courses do have time limits, but they're generous. They're generous. You know, the average fit cyclist can knock something like these rides out. We start with 100K, 200K, go all the way up to 1200K, and those take, you know, several days. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's lightweight, fast cyclotouring, as they call it.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of check in along the way. There's a sort of a starting point. You check in and it's really for your own. Nobody's sort of like. I mean, it's really for your own pride that you've done this and you checked in along the way.
That's right. That's right. Our courses, our routes are all internationally sanctioned, actually, and they're qualifiers for some of the larger international randonnée events, of which this year in France, there's Paris, 1,200K, 750 miles from Paris out to the coast, the Atlantic coast and Brest and back. That's going to take place third week in August, I believe. And our last qualifying ride is Solstice. We have a 600K here locally for the first time. Usually we have it up around Gakona, Delta Junction, Tok. Mm-hmm. Beautiful area to ride.
So have you done some of those events in France and overseas, or have you mostly done just the randonnée events here in Alaska?
Just domestically, yeah. Uh-huh. In fact, I was inspired to do something like Paris, and that's what led me to put on the Big Wild Ride up here in Alaska, mm-hmm. 1200K. We've done it twice. People from all over the world came up to ride this thing. It's essentially lightweight touring. You have 90 hours to get the ride done. All the riders flew into Anchorage. We stuck them on a ferry and went over to Valdez, and that's where the ride started. Everybody rode up Thompson Pass, and the first overnight was in Delta Junction.
So people just stay in a hotel in Delta Junction? Or
we actually worked with the school up there.
Oh, cool.
And so everybody pretty much just, you know, flopped on the gymnasium floor.
Oh, wow. That must be kind of fun.
It's a gas. Yeah. You know, you have 50, 60 people, you know, coming in at all different times and fancy bikes, and everybody's fit and having a good time, full of endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
They sleep for 4 to 6 hours and get back on the bike, and then they head over to Healy through Fairbanks. And that was another.
These are big distances.
They're big distances. They are, you know. And then from there, the third overnight was in Talkeetna, mm-hmm. and they finished the ride coming into Anchorage.
Well, Healy to Talkeetna is not quite as far as some of those other ones, yeah. But so are you carrying, I mean, when Christian and Patricia had like huge saddlebags, because that's their entire, everything they've got is on the bike, right? What you're talking about is like and they're sort of big beefy bikes, I'm sure high quality bikes, but they're built to like ride across Asia. But what you're talking about is like high performance bikes, and you're traveling pretty light, right?
You are traveling pretty light. Not high performance bikes, although we've seen everything from bamboo bicycles to 29er full suspension with knobby tires, everything in between, to carbon fiber time trial bikes. What you want is something durable, dependable, something to get the miles done. The neat thing about randonneuring is that it's approachable for the average person that has a family or a job, mm-hmm. or both. You're able to see a lot of the country. And what we've done with the Alaska Mountaineers is put our courses all over the state of Alaska to get people out there to see new areas, places they wouldn't normally ride, and to expose them to stuff that, you know, they may not know even exists here in Alaska. South Central, we've got this, you know, up in Peters Creek, there's a beautiful little one-lane wooden bridge that goes across this babbling stream. You know,
yeah. You
know, how often do you get to ride across something like that? You know, we don't have covered bridges, but, you know, that's the closest thing that we have, I guess.
And it's a club. We've got your website on our, if people want to go to alaskapublic.org. They can find the Alaska Run. Is it Randonneur?
Randonneurs.
Randonneurs site. And we also, I don't know if I neglected to mention, you can find the blog for our previous guests on our site too. You'll have to translate it to English because it's all in French, but you can do that. Google will translate it for you. So people join the club and it's not expensive, and then they can get access to these routes that you've researched and come on your events, essentially.
That's right. In fact, there is no membership.
You
show up. You know, pay about $10 per 100K to ride, get on your bike and go.
Okay.
That's another part of keeping it very approachable, you know, very accessible to people.
So let's talk about some of the routes and some of the sort of good weekend trips that folk could make, whether they're super fit or moderately fit. There's some highways in Alaska seem much more amenable to cycling than others. You know, I would say that the Parks Highway seems to have fairly wide shoulders and be pretty reasonable. Whereas the Glen Highway, I know they're working on it, but that section through the Matanuska River is pretty twisty and pretty narrow. Do you want to talk about some of maybe we'll go through the highways and some of the destinations that make more sense and some of the ones that might be a little sketchier.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can tell you about a ride.
You know all of them.
Well, yeah, I know a few of them. I know, you know, on the major road systems, I can tell you about a roadside pay on your honor pie stand. I know where there's a yak rancher. You know, you can be riding.
When you're cycling, I mean, I've noticed this myself. Like, you see, you don't just see a little bit more. You see, it's almost like being in a different place. You know, I've driven to Homer a zillion times over my life, and then only when I biked it did I see so much more. I couldn't believe how much more I saw. And then when I was driving, then I would sort of start to see those things. So
yeah. You're going at the right pace. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wanted to walk it, it's going to take you forever.
Of course,
you know, and if you're going to drive it, unless you drive a car like mine that only does 55, you know, you're just going to go too fast. You're going to miss a lot of the little gems.
Yeah.
But the bike goes at the optimum pace.
It does.
Pace.
Yeah. And so you pick up all this stuff, and it's really like traveling rather than just zipping from place to place. Yeah. So highway wise, let's talk about the three ways out of Anchorage. Do you agree that, Parks Highway is a pretty bike friendly route?
I'd say the Parks is, you know, the shoulders and the improvements they've done recently, is really a great way to go. A super destination is Talkeetna. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's a great turnaround point. And if you find that you get yourself to Talkeetna and you don't necessarily want to ride back, or maybe it's late, you know, maybe it's Sunday and you need to get back to work on Monday, you can take the train. You know, or even have family members meet you up there and bring you back.
So I think that sounds cool. And you've mentioned that you've developed routes where you can bike one way and train the train back. What's the deal with getting your bike on the train? Do you need to make special reservations and set stuff up for that?
They do charge an extra fee for the bike, but it's nominal. I think it's mm-hmm. $20 or something like that. Well worth it. I mean, it's such a great way to kind of do that multi-mode transportation, mini vacation, mini adventure kind of thing. Currently, we have a ride that goes from Anchorage to Seward. Leaves at 4 a.m. You know, that right there knocks a lot of people out. But if you can make, you know, if you can make the start, the normally fit rider, you don't have to be, you know, Lance Armstrong type to get to Seward in time to meet the train. Then you get the train ride back. And we're currently putting the finishing touches on a series of rides that leave from Anchorage. And they go Anchorage-Talkeetna, Anchorage-Denali, Park, Anchorage, Fairbanks. And all of those are coordinated, again, with the train schedule to get you to these distances and then take the train back.
And if you're, like, riding with your family or something and you don't want to, like, cover huge distances, you could get to Seward in 2 or 3 days. You could, you know, camp, like, Granite Creek halfway and then ride the rest of the way and then get the, you know, ride on Saturday, Sunday night, take the train back, you know, that kind of thing. It's time for the tourist to come back in the evening after a boat ride, so it's late in the day and makes all kinds of sense.
Yep. And there's always the Manitoba cabin you can overnight at too.
You could do that. Yeah. No, there's lots. I mean, the camping opportunities and, you know, on their way down there are incredible. And you can, you know, the Indian to Girdwood bike trail, I think everybody, many people have tried. It's pretty tried and true. Gets you off part of the highway. But then as you're going south, you have to cross those bridges through Portage, which are kind of narrow. And that's sort of like a spot to be aware of in terms of a little bit of caution.
Yeah, the advantage is early hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you're beating two things by that. You're beating the traffic, and you're also beating the winds. Another tip, I mean, Nikiski is one of my favorite places to ride for a couple of reasons. You do the Kenai Peninsula early in the season before the fish start running.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, that's where you're going to want to ride.
Reduce the traffic.
The traffic is so low. The campgrounds aren't being used.
Mm-hmm.
Nikiski in particular has, Kasich's Brewery out there kind of in the backcountry, which is another, you know, great destination. You go up and you get to Captain Cook Rec Center and you circle back through, you hit Kasich's and you come back into Kenai. You know?
Yeah. So you don't have to bring, you don't necessarily have to bring a heavy cooking setup along, because on most of these highways, there's cafes where you can just stop in. And because you're using so many calories, you can eat whatever you want, right?
Absolutely.
You can just chow down. And just, it's really enjoyable when you've been working out on the bike to just sit down and just dig into a restaurant meal.
That's
not
right.
Worry about
That's
getting right. Your camp stove out and stuff.
So let me tell you about, excuse me, probably my favorite potential credit card tour. You could drive up to Gakona, spend the night at the lodge right there, Gakona, take off, and excuse me, a full day's ride would be 128 miles, 200K from Gakona to Delta Junction. And if you're doing it credit card style, you're not going to be laden with a cook kit and a tent and
right,
a stove,
so you can go a lot faster,
and everything. So you can make that distance, you know, no problem in a full day, you know, 10 hours of riding, 12 hours of riding over the pass.
Mm-hmm.
Get another room in Delta Junction, spend the night, hot shower, great meal.
Yeah.
You know, they've got great restaurants in Delta Junction. The summer temperatures are, you know, they're always in the 80s.
Yeah.
And Delta Junction is just a wonderful place to ride through. Inevitably, I see riders coming down from Dead Horse every summer when I go through Delta Junction.
A ton of traffic on the Alaska Highway either.
No. On the on that section, very, very little traffic, you know, lots of commercial drivers, and they're very mm-hmm. polite, and they're very courteous and cognizant of cyclists on the road. And then from Delta Junction, it's another following day to Tok. You can get a room there. Mm-hmm. Again, moderate terrain, good riding, good shoulders. after a night in Tok, back to Delta Junction. So, mm-hmm. you know, in 3 or 4 days, you can split that course up, mm-hmm. and you're just getting the center cut of Alaska.
So it sounds like you're thinking in terms of doing maybe 10 miles an hour or so as sort of a, like, if you're thinking, like, you can do 100 miles in 10 hours.
There you go, yeah.
Is that, are we talking about somebody who is super fit and is biking all the time, or are we talking about something that, I mean, if you're moderately fit, you can maybe do 7. Or what's your thinking on that sort of? Because if you're planning out a trip like this, you kind of want to know that you're not going to get there at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. So you know, you might want to do a few rides to Girdwood, mm-hmm. or a few
right.
rides to, you know, do the back roads of Palmer or something.
Figure
like
out how
that,
many miles you know, you do in an hour.
If you're local here in Anchorage, yeah. So you'll get familiar with your bike. You'll get familiar with your body.
Mm-hmm.
You'll understand, you know, your energy needs and how fast you can go, how fast what you do need to carry. How to do little roadside repairs and stuff like that.
Yeah, and you'd probably take a little kit along with you to fix the bike.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about bike touring and randonneur distance biking and traveling, basically using your bike to travel and see Alaska or see the world, as we talked with our first guest. I'm Charles Wolforth, and my guest right now is Kevin Turinsky, who's the president of the Alaska Randonneurs. So how do you deal with the thing that surely many, many bikers have experienced, which is your rear end being on a bike like all day or all day, every day, and not just having it turn into like a big red rash?
Well, first of all, you know, get a pair of cycling shorts and keep them clean. Mm. So, you know, every 200, 300K or every overnight, you're going to want to change into new shorts.
Right.
The other thing is, a leather saddle. It takes about 40 miles to break one in, which is a ride down to Girdwood and back, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, it's like a comfortable, familiar, you know, leather chair.
It's going to conform to your body
absolutely
better than a plastic.
They're, okay, they're wonderful. The idea that you need more foam and more padding is actually, it actually works against you. You know, so if you have a well padded saddle, that's not really what you want. You want a saddle that,
oh, that's not intuitive.
It's
is it?
Not intuitive at all. You know, you think, you know, oh, I've got a pain in the rear, I've been riding too much, I need a cushier saddle. No, what you need is a well built saddle, something that'll support your bones better. Mm. And the Brooks B17, you know, that's the absolute standard.
Hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. What about if you run into weather, it seems to me that then you really, the prospects for chafing and for having your body kind of get torn up goes way up because, you know, you're soaking wet and just the things don't, you know, rub together the right way then. How do you deal with that?
That happens. And with leather saddles, although Brooks does now have a nice latex version of their B17, so, you know, the one thing you never want to allow happen is let your leather saddle get wet.
Okay.
And so if you're gonna be off the bike, you always have a
plastic
shopping bag or something that you'll slip over it. But it really won't get wet if your bike is properly outfitted with fenders and if you have your rain gear on. You're not going to have a problem with that, not at all.
So the bike that you use for biking at distance has fenders and has, you're not worried about like weight and like avoiding that kind of thing?
No, not at all. I have a full steel frame. I mean, my bike's quite heavy, quite durable. Uh-huh. It's kind of like the Ford F-350 of bicycles out
okay.
there.
Okay. Yep. Interesting. So the weight, worrying about like the few ounces is just not in the cards when you're touring and going distance.
We can all lose a lot more ounces right. off of ourselves, you know.
What kind rather of handlebars?
Rather than the bike. Let me get to handlebars.
Sure.
But the best advantage as far as, you know, making the ride easier or making your bike roll better is not trying to reduce the weight, titanium this or titanium that. Mm-hmm. Find the best rolling tires you can.
Mm.
That will make the difference. That'll make you go faster than any aerodynamic helmet or Lycra or, you know, fancy titanium knickknacks, bottle cage or anything like that.
Oh, great point. So, and you can tell, you know, if you switch from a mountain bike to a road bike, you immediately feel this unbelievable advantage in speed and effort. So if you switch from big commuter tires to skinnier tires, then you're going to see another increment.
And not necessarily skinnier tires, but tires that are known for low rolling resistance.
Okay.
You know, there are tires out there that are marketed to be, you know, durable, fast, reliable, dependable tires.
Sounds like, I mean, you're talking about investing a little bit more money to get good gear.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're not cheap. They're not cheap. But, you know, if you're going to put these many miles on it and, you know, you're going out to see the countryside, you know, you're investing a lot of hours in your trip.
Right. How much would you pay for a car to go on a road trip? Right.
If you're going to drive out to Glen Allen to ride out to Chitna, you know, I mean, you've already invested so many hours for the road trip.
Yeah.
And, so make it count. Make it matter.
Mm-hmm. Other gear thoughts in terms of, the handlebars?
Yeah, you were talking about handlebars. you know, I ride what are called mustache bars, and it's just kind of a flatter version of the French drop bars. But you just want a bar that will give you a variety of handholds, because when your body is on the bike for that many hours, things will start to get tired or go numb. You know, you have nerves in your palms and of your hands that will, you know, sometimes your fingers or your thumbs will go numb after so many hours just on the bars.
Mm-hmm.
Straight bars work, curved bars, you know, whatever's comfortable.
Just the ability to switch positions is going to reduce your fatigue.
Yep. And probably the best tip is just make sure your handlebars are high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of this Tour de France racer kind of stuff, where your handlebars or your stem is lower than the tip of your saddle. You know, start, if you're going on these tours or these adventure rides, put your bars up a little bit, you know, level with your saddle at least. You get a better view too.
Right, and the fatigue will be less because you're not putting all this weight on your
Absolutely.
Arms, essentially.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. What about your hydration and nutrition on a long ride? Do you wear a Camelback as you're riding?
Ratanurin, what you'll discover is the best place for additional weight is on the bike rather than on you.
Hmm.
And so you'll see the use of front racks, front bags, saddle bags, not really panniers like the French cyclotourists mm-hmm. you just had in, but actually a bag under the saddle to hold, you know, whether it's your power bars or an additional water bottle. Probably, a full water bottle per 50K, 50 to 100K, mm-hmm. you know, it's 35 to 60 miles.
Depending on the whether it's hot out. And all
yeah,
that.
Whether it's yeah. hot, whether you have a headwind. So, you know, you're not overhydrating. And, you know, it's surprising how little food you do need. You need a continuous supply of food so mm-hmm. you don't bonk out there on the road.
Yeah.
But it's not like you're a sled dog, you need 10,000 calories a day or something like that.
So do you ever get out there and you're just fighting a brutal headwind and the weather is cruddy and you just say, hey, this is supposed to be fun, to heck with it? I mean, because I think that
Absolutely.
A lot of people think like, I'm going to do this and what if it's awful, you know? You can always bail.
Part of the Ratanurin ethic is, you know, inevitably there's going to be a part of the ride that's not going to be any fun, and
right.
you just got to push through it. Now, mm-hmm. if you're on a tour, that'll be different. You can actually pull over, and maybe that's the place you're going to sleep that night.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's the place you're going to camp if you can get a room. You know, or if you're toting all your gear, that's where you're going to set up.
I mean, wind is really the worst thing, and I think it's interesting that when you're driving a car, you don't realize that. When you get up to highway speeds, the vast majority of the energy you're using is pushing wind out of the way.
That's right. It can be so demoralizing.
Yeah. And when you're on a bike, you do realize it.
Yeah.
So, but I guess there's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you can take a lower stance or something, but you just have to fight your way through it.
Not a whole lot you can do about it. Unless you're riding in a group, you know, you can switch leads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that'll take a lot of the pressure off, a lot of the burden off, I should say.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about routes and about traffic. From Anchorage, we didn't talk about riding down to, we can ride down the peninsula. Seward, you've got pretty good shoulders the whole way, I think, and you've got lots of campgrounds and places to stop. If you're heading for Homer, you have to find your way through that gauntlet of Cooper Landing, which is no shoulders and quite narrow. And maybe if you're going to do that ride, it makes sense to just get a lift through that section, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, luckily the speed limit drops there. Again, my suggestion is if you're going to ride the Kenai, do it before fishing season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really don't want to be down there anyways on the road during fishing season.
Or in the fall, yeah.
Yeah.
And you definitely don't want to do it on a Friday night. I've noticed that. It's like people come out of this town and it's like they're escaping from prison. They drive like lunatics on Friday night.
Absolutely.
You do not want to be out there on a bike.
No.
But you know, midweek, you know, way better. It's a, you know, the flow of traffic is big, and traffic makes a huge difference for you when you're on a cycle, on
yeah,
a bike.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just the noise factor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these back roads, I'll tell you a great back road tour. And if you can, it'll be too late now, but the Denali Highway right before Memorial Day weekend, they usually put a fresh plow on it to take all the...
the bumps.
Yeah, take all the bumps out, and the additional benefit is the bugs haven't hatched yet.
Mm.
So you've got clear, relatively stable late May weather, a smooth dirt road, the lodges are open,
mm-hmm.
No bugs. Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah,
that's really
so. Do you use
one.
Your same bike on the gravel roads as on the paved roads?
Or? I do. Yeah, I've got a pretty versatile bike. It'll handle different tire widths.
Would you ride out to like McCarthy on that bike? Or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be a great ride. Wouldn't
that
it?
Would be a terrific ride. And we do a ride. This is a wonderful fall ride from Glen Allen out to Chittenden and back.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a short unpaved section into Kenny Lake. The old road is still dirt.
Mm.
That's a wonderful road.
Yeah. So what about using the ferry and doing the loop from Whittier to Valdez and then back? Seems like that would be a good ride, except again, you've got to get through that section of the Glen near the Matanuska Glacier. Do you have concerns about that section, or is that a section you'd be willing to ride?
I've had several friends ride it. They haven't had any problem. I personally wouldn't ride it. I'd get mm-hmm. a ride through it. If you're riding out of town, it's predominantly uphill.
Yeah.
It's going to be very slow going. And, you know, we're all drivers. We all, mm-hmm. you know, we're all car owners and drivers. The last thing you want to do is get stuck behind a heavily laden cyclist going
up the hill,
like 2 miles an hour. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. And there's no, I mean, it's so narrow that it's really tough to get around them. Yeah.
Right, right.
I would think that going out to Cordova might be interesting too, going out the Copper River Highway.
I think you're right. Yeah. It's been ages since I've been out to Cordova.
Yeah. And there's so many other places you can do. Kevin brought in a book as well, which is out of print. It's called Alaska Bicycle Touring Guide, second edition by Pete Pretorius and Alice Culhane. We'll mention this on the website. Unfortunately, it's out of print. It's quite old, but it's time for it. Maybe you should write a new version, Kevin.
You've
got the knowledge to do it. Well, this has been great. I want to thank my guest, Kevin Turinsky from Anchorage, Alaska Randonneurs. Thanks for being with us, Kevin.
It was a delight. Thanks for having me.
Great information. And in the first half of the show, we heard from these amazing French touring cyclists, Christian Serret and Patricia Veron. And you can find their blog on our website at alaskapublic.org. Next week, I've got a really exciting show for you, which is about the history of Anchorage's trails and green belts, doing it in honor of our Anchorage centennial. And we'll have Vic Fisher, Lainey Fleischer, and Dick Mize, three giants who really helped create our world-class trail system here in Anchorage on the show. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Goki. Grace Bojean is our production assistant. And I'm your host, Charles Wolfworth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.